The next section of Mishlei Perek Vav has some truly extraordinary nekudos, most of which I had to provide footnotes for, because the Goyin quotes quite a number of chazals. Leich al nimola, I always use the hey hanimola, but the pasuk has nimola as a generic. It's not any particular namala. Namala is usually translated as ant, A-N-T. Leichal namala otzel re'ei drachah v'chakom. See its ways and become wise. So there is here a seeming break from the previous psukim. And we are going now to just any person, not imaravta l'reacha, the talmidei chachamim and dayonim. But we're going to any person, and in all aspects of Avodas Hashem, he speaks of three: Chochma, Midos, Maisim Tovim. So, you know, you have these three Nekudos that you are learning from the Namala. How so? Asher Ein Lo Kotzin, Shoiter U'Moshel. So first of all, there's no one standing there with a gun telling the Namala what to do. Now, of course, when we think about it, we ask ourselves, what about instincts? You know, the Namala is not making decisions. So part of our problem is that we have the ability to make decisions. And we can make the wrong decisions, or we can procrastinate, or become lazy, and not make decisions at all. So the specific nature of the Namala is built into the Namala. And that's what makes the example difficult for us, because it's just a parable. What I'm driving at is the following. You can look at an animal and you see the animal has a certain midah. Chazal tell us that you could see certain midos in this animal, certain midos in another animal. Here we're picking the Namala. But you have to understand that every one of those animals has a built-in instinct. Its DNA is carved in a certain direction, which makes them do what they do. When you are programmed that way, it's impossible to compare a person as Bechira Chofshis and has to make a myriad decisions and has instincts of their own that they should be like the Namala. They're not like the Namala at all. So this is really Mishlei. That's what I'm trying to say. As you see a Namala and you see certain things that if you would adapt them to your own Dalet Amos, to your own life, there would be a tremendous improvement. But it's not that we can say, well, if the Namala has it, we have it also. Because then by the Namala, that's what a Namala is. You know, Leikal the Namala, says the Goyin, Ki Adam Tzarech L'Darkei Hashem Gimul Dvarim Chochma Midoy Sumasim Tovim. There are three nekudos that you learn from the Namala, which makes the Namala specifically a role model. But again, it's what you see in the Namala, and then you adapt those things as a mashal to a nimshal. Not, if the Namala has it, why don't we have it? Because we're not programmed in that way. So you can't ask the Namala, what are you doing? Or why are you doing this? Memela, there's another Nakuda. The value system, the whole concept of values, does not apply to a Namala. A Namala programmed a little bit differently would do the exact opposite of all these three. And wouldn't be the role model. So the programming of the Namala does not give the Namala credit. Whereas in our case, there can be Schar, there can be Einish, there can be Zechusim. Because when we do it, we are making choices. What are we supposed to see in the Namala? Leichul Madmin Namala has Rizus Shalah. Shaisefes Harbe Apopi Sheino Tzricha Elamaat. Kamosha Kosu Bemedrash, Shehi Eino Ochelis Elochito Machzel Ishona. She eats a minimal amount, and what she collects is substantially more than what she will ever need. Now, it's very fascinating. To my mind, if somebody would tell me that, and I should be like the Namala, so then I would become a miser, and I would start stuffing money under the mattress, When someone would say, well, what do you need all of this for? You're not getting anything out of it anyhow. So they said, well, I'm trying to be like the Nemala. So there is in this Midah a peculiar thing. There's almost an exaggeration. The Nemala is so programmed for that Zrizus, for that constant keep going, keep moving, keep acquiring, that it ends up with an excess. Now, we could explain the excess, perhaps, if we want to, but it's not necessary. Why is it Dafka Zehu B'Masim Tovim? We'll soon try to analyze how the Goyin dissected the Nemala, I mean figuratively speaking, and figured out or determined how each of these three relates to the Nemala's peculiar nature. But he says that this Zrizus, this constant activity, is related to Masim Tovim. Then he says, Re'ei Drachecha, Hu B'Midos, She'eino Nogas B'ma She'eino Shalom. Right? Kamo She'omru B'Midosa, She'pam Achas, Nosha Atvua, V'skaptzu Kulam Ve'irichu, She'savru Shul Shalahem. They had a sense of, they were able to identify these items and realize when he says, Kevin She'irichu, through some sense of smell, or however it is that they detected. And biologists and entomologists are very busy trying to figure out how these very simple creatures communicate. And it's really extraordinary and very complex and very fascinating. But however they communicate, the Goyin is telling us that they stay away from something that's not theirs. So once it's been identified as Sheino Shalohem, Loinot Luklum, Lochein Rei Drachel Umidoseo Ulamad Mimeno.
What's Midos in English?
Midos? Character traits. And v'chacham hu b'chachma. K'mo shomru b'medrash, sh'anemola oisa gimul chayrin, v'eino meniach esatvua lo b'elyona, v'lo b'tachtona, elo b'emtsa, ki misyari min agashomim shalomalo, min atoim shalomata, v'chein rei chachmosa v'chakal. You're not going to be able to find the Nemala and ask the Nemala, why are you putting your dafka in such a way, and how is it that it's preserved so well? But the fact is, that's what the Nemala does. So when the Nemala does that, you have to realize that you have to plan your life, you have to be wise, you have to be intuitive, you have to be able to figure out where a problem could arise and anticipate it. So that's Chochma. So you have Zrizus, you have Midos, Eina Loikeach, Eina Shaloi, and you have Chochma.
What does
the
Nemala mean?
An ant. Yeah. Let's continue and then we'll look at the whole picture. She'ein lo, says the pasuk in pasuk Zayin, Katzin, Shoter, Moshel. There are three essentially synonymous words. You know, he doesn't have a boss. Katzin u b'chokma, Shaloi mei Torah barabim u meira hayra b'Yisrael, Shoter hu b'maisa, L'kayim hapsak v'lirdoi sulachriach lases dover, u Moshel. Who be midos? Vashgiach shlo yehi avla vegezel vechomos ba'ir. Vezeh she'omer vayom Avram el avdo zekan beiso hamoshe b'chol ashelo avdo hu shoiter zekan beiso hu kotzin moshe kemashmoi mashgiach. Vezeh she'omer ben meshek beisi meshek is mem shin kuf moshe shoiter kotzin. In other words, you see that the Nemala is doing things without a policeman, without anybody that will enforce any of these inyonim. So Katzin is a certain kind of policeman, Shoter another kind, and Moshe. So what does it have to do with us? We'll soon see. Tochin b'kayitz lachma, agra b'kotzer ma'achola. She prepares.
Maybe Midos takes a measure on this
kind of thing. No. He's talking about characteristics. He's talking about Midos. Rei drachecha u'midoseha u'lamad mimena. But tochin b'kayitz lachma, says the pasuk ches ogra bakotzir ma'achola. Again, there are two parallel phrases that are very similar. Tochin bakayitz lachma, it prepares its lechem. Notice lachma, not lechem, because it only takes its own, as he said before, and he's going to say again the going. And tochin bakayitz lachma, it prepares its bread in the kayitz, in the summer, it prepares for the wintertime. And ogra, it collects. Bakotzir, at the time of the harvest, ma'achola, that which it's going to be able to eat later. Again, when it becomes winter and there's no food available. So it plans ahead, it prepares, and it over-prepares. So what is the nimshal? So the Goyin says, now we're up the top of page 2, talking about kayitz lachma ka namola be'es ha-ketzira eina oisa klal rakay sefes. The Goyin has a sense that there's some sort of a preparation or a development of the food in such a way that it's able to be preserved. Now, I don't know if he means that he puts it in that middle compartment, where there's just a lot of collection going on as long as you can collect, and then later on the processing, whatever processing he's referring to, is going to take place. But he needs this for his nimshal. And then for Amar Lachma, as I said, ki eina oigeris v'oisefes rak ma sheroi l'machola v'loi b'shvil acher klal. Now here he has a very interesting thing. Not only is lachma, as he said before, because it doesn't take somebody else's, but lachma is also that I'm selfish. I think only of myself. That's very interesting. Ants, in their instinctual nature, are very much an aggregate. There are colonies of ants. It's a tzibur kind of thing. There's no such thing as an ant unto himself. And nevertheless, the Vilna Gaon understands the pasuk as saying that when it collects with its own sense of need exclusively. And how the Gaon applies this is much more important to me than how he saw that in the Namal. But inyon shitzorecha adam bimei neurav shuzmana kotzir legor v'leasayf hainu lumei toira harbe v'chakach b'kayitz shuzsayf yamav bimei ziknuso. He doesn't mean when the person's 80 and 90, he means when the person's 40 and 50. Litchin oisam lohavin kol dover al burio. Bezehu im ein kemach ein teira, im ein teira ein kemach, kloima. Im lo yiyah biyodoi teira harbe, lo yiyah loi mima litchin. Vim ein kemach, kloima, shalo yitchin vidaktik heitev, ein teira, kloima ein biyodoi klum, af shalom ad harbe. So he has here a very unique, many unique pshatim. But the first unique pshat that we've encountered is, what do we normally think of ein kemach, ein tor, ein tor, ein kemach? Kemach is?
Parnasa.
Parnasa. What is Torah? Torah. There's no parnasa, there's no Torah. There's no Torah, there's no parnasa. He's referring to two different aspects of Torah. Kemach is Torah, and Torah is Torah. So what is Torah versus kemach? So kemach, he says, is when you take the Torah and you grind it up, and you make flour out of the Torah. What does that mean? It means a much deeper and more penetrating comprehension. So when you take the Torah in its original form, you have to have Torah to comprehend, you have to have oitzris of Torah, you have to have the original wheat. If you didn't collect the wheat, what exactly is there to grind? There's not going to be much flour if there's no wheat to begin with. On the other hand, if you don't grind, what's the point of storing wheat? It's useless. And eventually, of course, it'll decay. So that's how he understands it. Mein kemach ein Torah, mein Torah ein kemach. Now, what I find fascinating is that based on what he says, the Seder should have been, im ein Torah ein kemach, the mein kemach ein Torah. Be that as it may. The Zeu sha'amar chazal, man da'amar ha, loy chosh l'kimche. He wants to prove that the word kemach can refer to Torah. So he quotes a Gemara. The Gemara happens to be in Maseches Psachim, and Rashi there explains it exactly in this sense. It's a critical statement about someone who made a comment in Torah, and the person who's reacting does not like that comment. He doesn't think it's well thought out. He doesn't think it's a good understanding of Torah. So what phrase does he use? Loi chosh l'kimche. He doesn't really concern himself about grinding the kemach. So Rashi's masbir, loi chosh l'kimche l'mashu toichein imchitim imsailas. In other words, it's casuistry. But he started out with the wrong materials, so he came to the wrong conclusion. He's not choshesh to the kemach that he's grinding. If you start out with poor wheat or chaff and you grind it up and make a flour out of it, you have a fine powdered chaff. That's what you end up with, nothing more. So memela, the image of kemach, that's the ikar that he's bringing here, is to Torah. Torah is kemach. Yeah. So the entire thrust of the gra, again, that's his first major chidush here. Imein kemach ein Torah, mein Torah ein kemach is both referring to Torah. So he says, that is the image of the namala. The namala spends a certain amount of time just collecting. And then the namala, after it's collected, is processing. So the same thing in Torah. You have to spend the early years collecting and the later years processing. If you don't have collected, you don't have what to process. If you don't process, what's the point of collecting? And that's how he understands it. Right. And Mistama, what happens to that stuff is that eventually it disintegrates. It doesn't remain forever. But the Namala's instinct, you know what I think he's saying? He's saying like this. In the Namala, you have to forgive the Namala for being excessive. But what we, because the Namala doesn't know what he's doing anyhow. He's just programmed to do it. But when we are doing it, what midah are we exhibiting? Or what do we see in the Namala to emulate? The answer is Zrizus. Now in Zrizus, you have to understand Zrizus. Vayashkem Avram Baboker. I'll give you Ava Mekalkelis Es Ashura. Right? So Zrizus is by definition a midah that refuses to measure things with precision. Zrizus is not a yekah. You can't have Zrizus and have that kind of enthusiasm and then take a micrometer and say, Ad kan v'su lo midi. It doesn't work like that. When you're a tailor, you measure. But when you were full of enthusiasm, you're always excessive. You're excessive by nature because before you realize that it's time to stop, you've gone across beyond what you need or beyond what you should have done. And that's the idea of Ayachvash, that he does it himself. What person on such a madrego, so wealthy, you know, drives his own car? He has a chauffeur. So wait for the chauffeur to come. You'll wait another 10 minutes. Zrizus. So it is Zrizus is a midah that does not allow for precision. That's what you learn from the Namala. Now, in the collection, because of the Zrizus of the Namala, he ends up with a lot of excess. That's not what we're looking for. However, I have to tell you, if you apply it to Torah, there's obviously one major difference that allows us to look at the Namala and realize that no matter how much Zrizus you have in Torah, there's so much Torah beyond that, as we've spoken about many, many times, that it's never going to be possible for you to get an excessive amount. Did you ever hear of a person that learned too much Torah, that has too many ideas? It's not possible. So memela, the Zrizus that's applied to Torah never ends up with that consequence. So it's kulat taif. Now, there comes a point where you have to start analyzing and thinking and comparing the bina that's associated with chokhmah. So he says that the namala has that in stages. I think that part of what he's saying is that with all of his Zrizus, he doesn't have the confusion that sometimes comes out of an increased appetite, that you want everything to rasahas, because it can't be. No one can process, you know, I think it was the Kloisenberger Rav when he was pushing for the Mifal HaShas, the Zichrono Levracha, So he says he doesn't understand. A person says a whole pilpul in Rashi on Daf Gimel when he never even learned Daf Ches. That's what he was saying. He's saying, like, where are you coming from? If you know Shas and Poiskim, so you have the material with which to work, and you know that you're not going to be contradicted, or the Kashi is over there, and the Teretz is over here. Divrei Torah Anim b'makam echad, Ashirim b'makam echad. Where are you coming from that all you learn is Templat in the year, and you can say all the pulling you want? The Teretz is, most probably, I guess, to justify it at all, is that you're not saying your own, you're saying others, and they did know all of this. But at the same time, the derech that's appropriate is to be oisef, and then the process. So that's what you learn from the Nemala. With all of that zrizus, he doesn't get confused to mix up, to be megalgal, the asifa with the processing. And then he says, v'chein mash amr chazal, rabach kotul kane ba'agma, ki boikeya eitzim yisachim bom, kloimar, ha'boikeya eitz godol, achar kach yeyane mimenu, v'yischamim kenegdo. That pshat of Yisachim Bom is one of the pshatim in Rashi, that if he cuts wood properly, he will then be able to benefit from the heating that the wood provides him when he puts it into the flames, into the oven. Uboikeya eitzim Yisachim Bom. Kloima, haboikeya eitz godol, achakach yehene mimenu, v'yischamim kenegda. Avol mishloi boka eitzim toivim, mipnei koichoi, oi menias shar dovor, huchoitech, konim ktanim min ha'agam. We'll soon explain that much more carefully. V'chein b'toyra, im loy loma toyra harbe, ein loy mimaliv koya eitzim, v'ein loy dinim, rak ma'at, ma'at dugmas ha'konim, v'zehu raboch kotl kani ba'agma. One of the Gemara is filled with all kinds of critical expressions that are fascinating, because they are images. So when he wants to say that your Rebbe doesn't know what he's talking about, or has not arrived at the truth, or whatever it is, there are different phrases being used, as we had a moment ago. You know, loy chosh l'kimche. So here there's another expression, katil kani ba'agam. He is cutting down reeds in the swamp, in the marsh. So what is that image? What's so bad about that? It says like that. You have a very big piece of wood, a big trunk of a tree, and that you chop it up properly, and you have fuel for who knows how long with a limited amount of work, because you can cut the yard of wood because you have the wood all assembled. It's one big piece, and then when you start chopping it up, you can measure it according to what you need, and everything is there with a minimum amount of effort. Masha'en Cain, if all you have is little twigs, do you know how many little twigs you have to collect to provide that fuel? It's unbelievable. And you can spend days. The same person has a big log, spends a few minutes, another person has to spend days collecting little reeds. Why doesn't he collect the big pieces of wood? The Tarsus is because he can't find any. So that's the image of the person that doesn't have the right amount of Torah, doesn't have the proper training, that he is not able to come to the right maskonos. So that's Rabach Kotel Kani Ba'agma. And of course, this is an expression that you have in a number of places in Shas, and then when you read in the Poiskim and the Teshuvah Sfarim, it's mentioned many, many times. V'zehu tochen b'kayitz lachma b'soif yomav shetzorich litchoin oisom heitev. Agra b'kotzer ma'acholo, hu neged tchilas yomav shetzorich lesoif v'lichnois toira harde. Again, afal pi, that agra comes before tochen, so why isn't it that way in the pasuk? Veisach nisht. But the pasuk starts with the processing and ends up with the collecting. V'omar lachma u'macholo, she'eino roa b'shvil acherim rak la'atzma. Now we're going to go into a parsha that I feel compelled to develop very carefully. There is a Gemara. The Gemara is presented to you in the footnote number 3. It's a very famous Gemara and very often misunderstood. Misunderstood by both friend and foe, if you know what I mean. It's misunderstood by the Egen Eloimdei HaTorah, and it's also certainly misunderstood by people who have attitudes towards people who learn Torah. This is the question of Torah as a self-centered, if not selfish, activity. How far can you take that? In other words, what happens if the needs and responsibilities of the family, the person's responsibility towards his family, gets in the way of the learning? So do you stop and attend to the needs, or do you continue learning and, in a certain sense, ignore those needs? Now, a person, l'cha'ira, should say, number one, that if my obligation is to provide parnasa, then certainly that obligation comes first. And that's probably why Ben Azai said his famous statement, Rechayim b'tzavaro, b'yasot b'tayra. Is it possible then that he has a yoke on his neck and he's Isaac b'tayra? I wanted to point out that I believe, and then I found out that Mendel Zatzer, son-in-law of the Chofetz Chaim, also said something essentially the same. The Rambam starts out in his concept of V'agisa bo yom v'loyla, that you have to be koveya azman. He doesn't say how much, could be even a few minutes. Bayoyim, and a certain amount of time at night, no one is exempt from that, because a little bit of learning is possible for everybody. So he writes, Bein Oni, Bein Osher, Bein Sholim Begufo, Bein Baal Yisurim. If he's healthy or he's sick, even if he has a lot of pain, whether he's young or he's a Zoken, Shetosh Ashkoichoi. And then he says, Afilu Oni HaMechazer Alam Sochim, even a person who's poor and he spends his hours begging for food, going from house to house, Machazer Alam Sochim. Nevertheless, the last thing in the list, and it sounds like an incremental thing. Even. Afilu baal isho vonim chayav likvoya loizman lomoy bayoim uvalayla shenema vagisa bayom uvalayla. So the question is, what's the afilu baal isho vonim? That's more of an effort or a struggle than a poor person that doesn't even have a panosa, or a sick person that doesn't have any kayach, or an old person that simply isn't waning years of his life. What is the afilu baal isho vonim, that's the last stop in the Rambam's live progression? So there are some who say, if I'm not mistaken, I believe I saw this many decades ago, that it's going on the oni. In other words, not a person who has a panosa, but he's a baal isho vonim. Even an oni who's not just collecting for himself, but he is a baal isho vonim. He has a huge achrayis, and he doesn't know what's going to be tomorrow. Even he has. So that's incremental. Because it's incremental above the regular Rani who only needs to take care of himself. But I always believe that the Afilu Baal Isho Vonim is Pshuto Kimashmo. It's not an Ani, it's the person as a Parnasa. So what's the crescendo? The answer is like this. Every one of the examples up to that point, it's a little sophisticated, but I think we can all handle it. Everybody up to that point, if you ask, what's the problem? In other words, what category in halacha would we put this problem? Like, what's stopping him from learning? That the Rambam says, even he has to learn. At least a little bit by Yomu Balaiwa. The answer is, onus, onus rachmona patre. Because the person's going to come and say, I can't. I don't have the kayak, I don't have the time, I don't have this, I don't have that. I don't have the brains, I don't have the zitzflesh, whatever's going on in the turmoil of his life, or the throes of his sickness, or the frustration of his old age. The Rambam says, never mind. We have proof positive from all these people like Hillel and everybody, you can handle it. A little bit of learning, there's no such thing. There's no einus rachmona patre for a little learning in the morning and a little learning at night. When it comes to baal isho vonim, it's not oinus. It's not I can't. It's I'm not allowed. Why? Because it's a shibud. And I believe that's exactly why he used the expression rechayim b'tzavaro. You know, rechayim b'tzavaro is a big law. But rechayim, you know what rechayim is? When you want to enslave somebody, you put a rechayim on his neck. Or if you have an animal and you put a rechayim, you understand. The Rechayim B'Tzavara is a sign that you're a slave. What's the pshat? You have shibud, you are meshuvah to your family. You wrote it in the Ksuba. So if that's the case, it is an afilu. Because everyone else, it's just a proof that you could still do it physically, even though you have everything going on in your life. But here it's a question of whether I'm allowed to learn. So the Rambam says, no, that minimum amount you have to do no matter what. Mashma, because it really doesn't interfere with your shibudim. But what would happen if your learning does interfere with your shibudim? So what's next? So l'chayra, everything would mitigate against the learning and say, listen, Torah is Torah's chayim. Torah's chayim means that a person is mechuyev to do mitzvahs, and if the mitzvahs take him away from learning, he's not going to do the mitzvahs. Of course he can do the mitzvahs. It's totally efshalasa sayyidei achayim, efshalasa dei achayim. So Torah always comes first as long as those mitzvahs can be done by others. But Torah does not come first to the mitzvahs that you have to do yourself, because otherwise you'd have the extremely paradoxical and rather ludicrous consequence that the person's going to learn about everything and never do it. And you'll ask him, why don't you do it? I can't do it and I'm not interested in doing it because Talmud Torah is connected kulam. So obviously, when it comes time to take the lulav, and you have to buy a lulav, and you have to put together the lulav, and everything takes time. And when it comes time to put on tefillin, or to daven, or to this, or to that, all of these things that you're mechuyev to do, you have an obligation to stop learning and to do the mitzvah, unless someone else can do it. So if a person encounters a meis mitzvah, or he has something that is only his obligation because no one else is around, he cannot say, I'm learning, etc., etc. So now the question is, what about the family? So here is where this chazal comes in and seems to undermine a lot of what we just said. Let's take a look. Footnote number 3. Masachas Erevin is in the Chafala from the base. Very, very famous Gemara. It's made famous by the questions that people ask about it. So that's what makes it famous. Amar Avchislam Amavukva. What does it mean, Kvutzos of Taltalim? This is a pasuk, of course, in Shir HaShirim, and the pasuk is speaking about the locks of hair. And then it says, Shchayrois Ka'ayrev. They are as black as a raven. The birds that are pitch black, that's how black the hair is. So what is the pshat that it's, this is also a mashal. Shchayrois Ka'ayrev. So what's Kvutzos of Taltalim? Every little bit of jot and tittle in the Torah allows for huge amount of Torah analysis. What's next? The latter part of the pasuk. So what's ka'ayrev from the word ma'ayrev? That's again a play on the words. And what does ma'ayrev mean? That not only is he there during the day, but he's even there at night. He's the first to come into the Beis Medrash, the last to leave, and that's how he managed to excel in Torah learning. Fine. There's nothing controversial so far about any of this. Rabbi Omar, b'misha mashchir panov aleihem ka'ayrev, a person that deprives himself, and how Memela, his face looks swarthy, like an oirev is black. You know, when a person is hungry, his appearance changes. So that's the image here. Again, it means mesiras nefesh for Torah. What's the next one? Rav Amar, b'mi shemesim atzmai achzori al bonov v'al b'nei beisai ka'oirev. It isn't the blackness of the Ayrev, it's the Hanhaga of the Ayrev that we're comparing a Talmud Chacham to. What is the Hanhaga of the Ayrev? It's a peculiar bird. It cares about itself, abandons its responsibility to its young, and allows the young to fend for themselves. You hear? So what is the analogy? So you see a very interesting thing. In the previous examples or interpretations or analogies to the pasuk, they don't give you a story. They don't give you a living example. Why not? Because it's pretty much self-evident and self-understood. We know people like that. people who are Maisa Nefesh for learning Torah, are people who are coming into the Beis Medrash first in the morning and leave last at night. That's not a problem. I don't have to give you an example. But this is a strange thing. The Torah is a Torah of Chesed. The Torah is a Torah of Midas Tovus. The Torah is a Torah of gentleness. What's going on over here? Achzori libnei beisai ka'orev. So he says, ki ha, the Rav Ada bar Masna have ka'ozel libei Rav. Rav Ada bar Masna went off to yeshiva. You hear? Amra le devisu. His wife asked him a very simple question. What's going to be? That's the question. What's going to be? Amra le devisu. His wife. Yenuke didoch my evidluhu. What shall I do to provide for your children, for your babies? Amalo mishlimu kurme ba'agma. Did then the marsh become depleted of its stock? You'll find food for them in the marsh. You'll get reeds and seaweed. I don't know what there is in a marsh, but this chingafinan anaitza. This gefinan anaitza is pile ployim. Rashi, let's take a look at the Rashi. Oirev achzori albonov. Kedichsev, famous pasuk that we all daven, livnei oirev asher yikro. The babies of the oirev bird cry out to Hashem because nobody's taking care of them. Zokt v'akadosh baruch hu mezamin lehem yitushim v'nichnasim l'toch piyam. So how did the babies of the oirev survive? They eat mosquitoes. So kurmi yirakos lishna achrina gemi lach ki akris lu rechicha dislebe v'tachni leva avdi rifta. It doesn't make a difference what you find in the agam. Rashi has two different products that you find in the agam. But what is he saying to her? What is Rav Ada bar Masna saying to his wife? You'll find an Eitzah, you'll provide for them, I'm going off to yeshiva. The remarkable Gemara. This is a Gemara that's Eino Eimer Ela Darsheni. What kind of approach is that? Let's go back to the Gra for a moment. We'll come back to this, of course, but I want to go a little bit further. Because he has a very interesting pshat in the Maisa with Munbas HaMelech, a Gemara in Maseches Baba Batzer Daf Ches. We'll soon see. Omer Lachmo Macholo, let's go back to the last two lines of the Pnim on page 2. For Omer Lachmo Umacholo, Lachmo with a Mapikei, it's her Lechem, it's her Machol. Why? Why the Dogish in the hay? Why is it her Lechem? It should just say Lechem. It should just say Machol. She'eina roya b'shvil acherim rak la'atzma. Then he says, what's the analogy? Ki e efsha lil moitor. Listen to the lashon of the Gra. Ki e efsha lil moitor im yia loydaigais acherim b'libay. It's a remarkable thing. Children get sick. People have needs. There's all kinds of issues. Where is the father? Where is the husband? So you have Al Kulam, the incredible image of Rabbi Akiva and his wife. So you don't feel this chazal in that story as much as we should. You know why? Because the chazal about Rabbi Akiva's wife is being the story is being generated by her, not by Rabbi Akiva. But imagine for a moment. The wife, you hear your wife say, Halavai, he should go back for another 12 years. She's lamamish in rags, and there's no relationship. So you stay for a couple of days, a couple of weeks, and then you go back to yeshiva. So Enochanami, he heard in her voice, in her comment, the extreme that he ended up turning around and going immediately back to yeshiva for 12 years. That's true. It was generated by her, and certainly therefore has her haskama. It's not like the lady in the story of Rav Ada bar Masna who asks her husband, so what's going to be? Rachel, the wife of Rabbi Akiva, not only is she not asking what's going to be, she's saying, I don't want anything from you. Just go back and learn. And she is desperate and hungry and poor
and barely dressed, just barely. And she looks like a beggar lady. And she is the daughter of Kalba Savua, who has written her off. Now, as much as that story is generated by her, and therefore we can't hold Rabbi Akiva, so to speak, to blame, because she's the one who wants it so badly. That's true. But at the same time, what kind of hanahoga is this? What kind of hanahoga is this? Where is the normal concern for your wife, for a family? So what are we saying? So we would say, well, Rabbi Akiva, that's a different story. Comes along the Goyen, and he says it in a very generic sort of way. So what are the consequences of this? So the Goyen is saying it black on white, that if you have a substantial concern, which we would expect is the aleph beis of the relationship that the Torah demands, and as I told you, v'afilu bal isha banim, because there's a shibud, and it's in the ksuba. Remember, everybody, all the people are sitting and learning. The first thing that somebody that's not like that aleph, as I told you, this gemara is intriguing to both talmidei chachamim and people who hate Torah. So they say, what happened to the ksuba? What about your responsibility in the ksuba? So you're not fearing an aleph life if you sit and learn, because you're not fulfilling the ksuba which you committed yourself to. So how do you answer such a person? So there's a gemara here that seems to ask the same. I mean, if you learn this gemara, he asks the same question again. What happened to the ksuba? What happened to his responsibilities to his family? How could it be that Torah is able to take you out in that way? But there's a beferish gemara, achzori al bnei beisik ha'arif. And then he quotes another chazal, which is fascinating, because normally we would have interpreted it differently. So what is that all about? So the Gemara in Bava Basra, I have it in the footnote number 4, right there, on page 3. Gemara in Bava Basra, it's in Daf Yud Aleph, I'm sorry, I said Daf Ches before, Daf Yud Aleph, Amid Aleph. Maise b'mumbas ha-melech she-bizbez o-itzreisov o-itzvis ha-voisov b'shnei batzoris. Mumbas had a period of hunger, and very much not like Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, who lacked all the treasures and ran for his life so that he should not be besieged by the poor and have to give them all his food. Munbaz did the exact opposite. He opened up all the storehouses. He was the king. He had a huge amount. And he depleted his storehouses in favor of the poor that they should survive. So his advisors, probably members of his family for sure, they started asking him, like, what are you doing? So it says here, V'chibru olav echav ubeis aviv v'amru loy, avoisecha gonzu v'alsifu ashal avoisam. You're so not a good king. You're such a profligate spender. You have no concern for the future. Look at your ancestors. Not only were they matzliach, but they added to the treasure that they received from their forefathers. And you're doing the exact opposite. You're depleting the whole treasury. Right? He said the following, there's always a possibility that some enemy is going to come and ransack the treasury. But Anigonasti, where I really put the money, is a place where no one can touch it. Anigonasti b'mokom she'ena yad sheletes bo. It's all the way up there. Because what can a diamond or a ruby do for you? I save people's lives. Next, all of this is not relevant to the point that the Vilna Gaon wants. Now is the line. Avoisai gonzu la'acherim, va'ani gonazti la'atzmi, shenema ulucho tiyetzdoka. It's that line, the next to the last Avosai statement of the comparing of his forefathers. You say that my forefathers were so terrific, and I'm the spender, and I'm the one who's ruining the government and destroying the economy and not leaving anything for you folks. That's really what they're concerned about, nothing more. Well, I'm telling you, amongst all the other things that he makes, that I'm Takachu, I'm doing it for myself. That's how the Vilna Gaon interprets it. You're worried that I don't care about anybody else, meaning I don't care about you, the other members of my family, the other members of the kingdom who are in charge, who are running the Malucha, the princes of the realm. You're right. I really don't care about you. I only care about myself. So there's nothing left for you. But I have achieved an unbelievable schar, and I have Olam Haba, and I have Nefashos, and I have this, and I have this, and I have this, and I have this. So when you add it all up, what's he saying? He's saying, Enochanami, I don't care about you. That's what it seems to be saying. So the Vilna Gaon takes it at face value, and he says, right. That's another example of what it means, except fascinating that this is not in Limud HaTorah. What is it in?
It's stuck of a chesed.
You cannot care about others by caring about others. It's a fascinating thing. I mean, it's like a strange thing. Very, very interesting. I just want to point out that the Tashbitz in his Pirush of Magen Avos, that's why I brought it in footnote number 5. He has on the expression in Pirkei Avos, Perik Beis, Kona Shem Toiv Kona La Atzmai. So his understanding of what Munbaz was saying is very different than the Vilna Gaon. His understanding of what Munbaz is saying is simply this. No matter how much you think you're taking for yourself, but it really isn't for yourself. And it's like the pasuk that says, Va'ozvu La'acherim Chelom, and like half a dozen psukim in Kehelis, that imply, even the Ava Gemara, famous Gemara, Hai Alma Kebehi Lula Damya. So Shmuel is telling his Talmud, Rabbi Yehuda, Chatoife Echoil, Chatoife Shasei, and Rashi explains over there that he's giving him business advice. And he says, eat it and enjoy it, because there's no point in leaving it for your children. So whatever that's all about is not Negeya, but it's a similar kind of thing. How do you know that they won't take the money and squander it the next day? You earned it, you keep it. Use it, enjoy it. It's that kind of thing that he's saying here. The only thing that you can really say is your own is tzedakah ma'asim tovim. Riches, so what is it similar to actually? That he said earlier, it's exposed to be stolen, it's exposed, it's not secure. So that's what he's saying here again, according to the Tashbitz. But according to the Vilna Gaon, that's not what he's saying. He's saying very simply, I did it for myself. You lost, and it's too bad on you. So that's an interesting interpretation of that Maisa. But now you go back to the Vilna Gaon's use of this Gemara, and you ask, is Torah and Mitzvahs a selfish activity? Where the person is busy with himself, Yom HaValayla, how to improve himself, and how to gain the most Olam Haba, and how to acquire the maximum amount of Torah, and the rest of the world doesn't count for anything, even your own flesh and blood, even your own children that you're responsible for. So we'll have to wait. I didn't plan it this way exactly, but it's terrific. We'll have to wait until next Monday, there's a session.